From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm John Donvan, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In the 2011 final episode of her show, Oprah Winfrey offered up this piece of wisdom in a closing benediction to her legions of acolytes.
Everybody has a calling, and your real job in life is to figure out what that is and get about the business of doing it.
Many of us are still figuring out what our calling is, let alone how to go about making it happen. But the women you are about to meet believe that they have found their callings. These are college-educated, professionally accomplished millennials who are now on the path to becoming nuns. This hour, On Point, calls to faith and becoming a nun now. Joining me now, three women who are making this journey. With us from Philadelphia, Sister Colleen Gibson. She is a 28-year-old in the second year of her novitiate with the Sisters of St. Joseph. She writes the Global Sisters Report for the National Catholic Reporter, and she was class valedictorian at Fairfield University. Sister Colleen, welcome to On Point.
Hi, John.
Hi. Also from Philadelphia, we're joined by Danielle Gagnon. She is 33. She is discerning life, a phrase that we will revisit as a Sister of Mercy, and she will enter the novitiate in July. Danielle, welcome to you.
Thank you so much, John.
Thank you. And with us finally from Chicago, Sister Josephine. She is 33 years old also and a novice with the Sisters of the Holy Name of Nazareth. She is a former project manager and vice president with Bank of America. Sister Josephine, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you, John.
It's great to have all of you here. And as I've just outlined, all of you have interesting and diverse pasts. And I'd like to start, before getting to the life that you live now, a little bit of a sense of the life that you lived before you found and began to follow your vocation. And let's start with you, Sister Colleen. Again, to remind our listeners, you're 28 years old and a novitiate with the Sisters of St. Joseph, and you are a writer. And you were a valedictorian at Fairfield University. Did you see yourself, let's say, when you were 10, 11, 12, 13, going in this direction?
I think, John, when I was growing up, I grew up in a Catholic family. It was a family that I didn't realize was religious until I think I went to college and realized that it wasn't normal for your parents to be teaching your religious ed classes and to be at church multiple times a week. And so I think I was probably about 14 years old, 13 or 14 years old, when I first started thinking about becoming a sister, but I didn't know any sisters. There were no sisters in my home parish. I had never met any, so I knew Maria from The Sound of Music, and I knew Whoopi Goldberg from Sister Act. That was my experience, and I knew that I wasn't Whoopi Goldberg, and I also knew that I wasn't Maria. And so I just kind of put it in the back of my head
but let me stop you.
On living life.
Just to understand, if you didn't actually have any exposures to any sisters directly, where did the idea really come from?
I think, reflecting back on it, it was experience of priests and people who were living their religion each day. And so that seemed like a path. Sisters were living their life. Even though I didn't know any, they were living a religious life each day. So it was something that appealed in that way. But as a 13-year-old, I was really confused that this thought was popping up in my mind.
But you went to college, you went to Fairfield University, which is a Jesuit Catholic university in Connecticut. And while there, did you study? Did you study religion in any sense? Was that your focus?
Yeah, when I entered Fairfield, I began as an American Studies major, concentrating in sociology. But I started taking religious studies classes. And really early on, I realized that my faith was important to me. And that was one of the reasons I went to Fairfield, was because it was a Catholic school. But I started taking religious studies classes and really fell in love with it. And I went to visit a priest in campus ministry one day as a freshman and said, you know, I'm thinking about becoming a sister, thinking about becoming a nun. And he asked me, he said, are you going to leave college to do this? And I said, no, that's crazy. Like, why would I do that? I need an education. And he said, forget about it. And of course, as a 18-year-old kid, when you tell an 18-year-old to forget about something, they can't. And so it was just kind of, it sat in the back of my mind. And I just kept on returning to it, you know, as I did service, as I studied religion, as I lived my life. It was something that just kept on coming back and kept on, you know, tugging at my heartstrings.
Let's go back in time now with Sister Danielle Gagnon to remind again listeners, you are in a process called discerning religious life as a novice elect at the Sisters of Mercy. What does it mean that you're discerning religious life?
Well, John, it means that I am getting to know what religious life means and whether or not that is the life that I am called to. It means that I live in community with sisters in Marion, Pennsylvania, and I work right now. I'm working at one of the sponsored ministries of the Sisters of Mercy, so I get to meet and know sisters and get to learn what life is like and see how that fits for me, what the fit is.
And Sister Colleen said that she did not actually know nuns as a child. What about you?
I did. We grew up in a family that had lots of friends who were sisters, and actually my grandmother had an aunt who was a sister. I grew up going to Catholic schools and having sisters as teachers. So unlike Colleen, I did have some familiarity, actually quite a bit of familiarity with sisters as a child and a young adult.
And when did you know that you had the calling? Well, it sounds like you're trying to decide whether you had the calling, but when did you have the inkling?
Upon reflection, I think it goes back to my childhood. Like Colleen, also, I can remember watching The Sound of Music with great enthusiasm and attraction.
Boy, that's a very influential movie.
It is. And then, you know, as I got older and went along in my education and learned from the sisters the things that they care about in the world, the things that are important to them and what they spend their lives doing, there was a real synchronicity there for me. And, you know, I learned from sisters how to be in relationship with others and how to be in relationship with the world.
All right. Thank you, Sister. And now, Sister Josephine Garrett, the most fascinating, we think, transformation. You were a banker. You were a vice president at Bank of America in Texas. And now, as of the last 7 months, you're a novice with the Sisters of the Holy Family of Nazareth. And as I understand, you were not Catholic.
No, I wasn't Catholic. But first, John, in good form, I got to do some shout outs to my aunt and uncle, my brothers, my family and friends, and most importantly, the Sisters of the Holy Family of Nazareth. Please forgive me. Couldn't not.
I'm going to forgive you if that's the end of it.
It is the end of it.
Okay.
So, I wasn't Catholic. I actually grew up Baptist in Texas, in Houston, Texas. And it was the kind of environment where we were at church all the time. And most of the time I really liked it. But sometimes I didn't feel like going. I'd be like, we were just at church. But it wasn't optional. So we were always at church. And that was a part of our family life. I wasn't really heavily exposed to the Catholic faith until I went to college. So I attended the University of Dallas, and I chose it because the people were nice to me. I didn't actually realize that I was choosing a college with such a strong Catholic identity, because Catholic identity didn't really mean anything to me. So when I showed up for school and was experiencing this strong Catholic identity, I was like, what?
Mm-hmm.
But eventually it just really it caught hold of me. It captivated me and eventually drew me into the faith.
But you were actually working at Bank of America while going through this process of decision making, it sounds like.
Yes, I started.
Did your colleagues know that you were going through this?
Some of my colleagues knew, and it really, really came out when I actually moved into the convent. So I kind of did some outside prayer and discernment for a couple years, and then I moved in and became like a live-in candidate. And at that point, I kind of had to let the cat out of the bag in a bigger way because I needed to work from home. And so I asked permission to work from home, which was really work from convent, so that I could be present to the sisters and present to my own discernment. And so once two people knew she's going to work from home so she could be at the convent, it was like 300 people knew. So it was once I was living at the convent, it was pretty common knowledge.
Well, how did your colleagues back in the office react?
It was actually beautiful. Lots of questions, lots of openness, excitement for me. I can remember probably the thing that touched me the most was one of my coworkers and a woman who was a mentor to me in my career. She said to me, you know, I don't know a lot about what nuns do, but she said, but I believe if you're doing it, it's something worth doing. So I had a really great level of support in the workplace.
And Sister Colleen, in terms of your telling the people in your world what you were going to do, what was the response, say, of your family when you told them that you were considering this?
It was actually my brother growing up had always been pegged as the priest. So I was like the dark horse. And so when I told my parents, they were apprehensive, to say the least. They were not thrilled about the idea. Having sent me through college and having me get an education and then to be out in the working world and writing, they needed some time to really process what the value of this life was and what it meant for what they had dreamt for me all my entire life. And so they pushed back.
All right. I want to ask more about that when we come back from the break. And all three of you, we're hoping, will stick around, Sister Colleen Gibson, Sister Danielle Gagnon, and Sister Josephine Garrett. And we would love it if you can join our conversation, too. Tell us where your spiritual journey has taken you and what do you hear in the journeys of these women. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And we're going to go out now with the singing nun, Sister Christina, rocking it out on Italy's version of The Voice with No One by Alicia Keys. I'm John Donvan, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This is On Point. I'm John Donvan in for Tom Ashbrook, and we are talking about answering life's call today. For our guests, that call has led to life as a nun, a blessing which for convents who have seen their numbers drop to just north of 51,000 from a high of nearly 180,000 back in the 1960s. And for most young women today, it remains an unusual choice. But we're speaking with three young women who have made that choice. We are talking with Sister Josephine. She is a novice with the Sisters of the Holy Family of Nazareth. With Danielle Gagnon, who is a discerning and novice elect with the Sisters of Mercy. And with Sister Colleen Gibson, a second-year novice with the Sisters of St. Joseph. And I just want to go back to where we were leaving off with Sister Colleen when you were talking about your parents' response. And Sister Colleen, you were almost describing, as you put it, they had put all of this money into your education, I'm assuming, for a sort of secular outcome, and yet you were choosing the religious life. Did they feel a sense of loss about this?
I think they definitely did. And, you know, their initial response was a great, you know, Irish Catholic response of silence. We just didn't talk about it because it was such a big issue. But it was disappointment in, you know, seeing my potential and not knowing whether that potential would be actualized in the convent, to be in religious life, that there's something very different from, you know, the faith that they taught me and going to church on Sunday versus giving your life to something and not seeing the returns on that education, that it's not, there's not a monetary return. And so we struggled with that together. We also struggled with the fact that, you know, entering religious life means that I wouldn't be able to produce grandkids and that all of those things that they had dreamed since I was a very, very small girl from probably the moment that I was born weren't going to be actualized. And so we had to work through that. But their initial response, you know, was hesitation. And they really wanted to make sure that I was sure that this was something that I wanted to do and that I understood everything that it would mean for my life.
So it's not that they were trying to talk you out of it.
No, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. They just want to make sure that I was making, you know, a conscious choice and that I knew what it was going to mean. We didn't have a sit down of you can't do this or we're not going to ever talk to you again. But there was pushback and I could feel it. And it really made me go to prayer and, you know, sit with God and really sit with, you know, why do I want to make this decision?
Yeah,
and why is it my own personal decision and no one else's?
I want to talk about the pushback issue because all three of you to some degree have alluded to it. But since you've also all made allusions to the importance of the sound of music, let's listen to a little clip from it, the life-altering exchange between Maria and the Reverend Mother.
Captain Von Trapp, are you in love with him?
I don't know. Well, the Baroness said I was. She said that he was in love with me, but I didn't want to believe it.
And what we hear in that clip, even from the Mother Superior, is a challenge to Maria to really be sure that you're sure. And in this case, it related to her love life. But I'm not at this point going to that issue, although I'd like to see where that fits in. But just more to the general notion, Sister Josephine Garrett, that there seems to be this getting to where you are always seems to be a struggle, that there is pushback. Some of it might be internal and some of it might be coming from the world around you. What is that about?
You know, I think the pushback that I have experienced in different places, I experienced it more as a struggle with what's not known. And so when I did have someone pushing back, it was, you know, that kind of interrogation type of questioning. And what I saw behind that was, okay, this is the unknown. And what's behind the unknown at the end of the day is curiosity. Mm-hmm. So curiosity is something that can be fruitful. It's a good thing. And so when I'm experiencing that pushback, so that's what I think is behind it at the end of the day is being confronted with the unknown, mm-hmm. Which brings about curiosity.
And Danielle Gagnon, what about you? As you explained before, you're going through this process of discerning religious life, which makes it sound like it's not a done deal, that you're—I don't know if the word struggle, it doesn't say struggling, it says discerning. But it mm-hmm. sounds like there's a, I really need to make sure this is right for me process that you mm-hmm. need to go through. And what are the pushback, either internal or external for you in going forward?
The pushback, I would say it isn't consistent. I would say that every day there are there are struggles in each of our lives every day. And no matter what choice we make in life, whatever we would like to or feel called to commit ourselves to, there's a desire to know, I think, whether or not that is... that's the right decision. And I think it's just part of being human.
Danielle, when you were attended Assumption College, the name alone tells me that it's a Catholic Catholic institution, but you also graduated from Harvard University's extension program. Obviously, a lot of mixing with the non-religious and secular world. Did the fact that you were on this course act to isolate you either emotionally or even socially? Did you go in different directions from fellow students at the end of the day? And were they speaking, in a sense, a language of ambition that wasn't yours?
I think it was actually quite the opposite, John. I think my desire to be a sister really stems from my wanting to be in relationship with people. I have really, really close friends who I started college with at Assumption, and we've grown up together. And though our lives have taken different routes and different paths, they run parallel, and we support one another. And I've remained really connected, and they're among my biggest supports as I continue my own discernment.
But were you, and I don't mean this glibly, but were you sort of a good girl? Did you obey the rules and avoid? Avoid bad behaviors, et cetera?
I like to think that I've made wise choices. you know, I think we all look back on things and say, oh, I wish I had done that differently. Mm-hmm. I don't have any regrets.
You mean you don't regret anything that you did in the sense that I wish I hadn't done that, and you have no great sins to atone for, it sounds like. But I won't get that personal on that. What about though the issue of two things? As we said at the beginning of the program, you're joining an institution that is on a downward trend, certainly in terms of its membership. And you're joining communities where I'm assuming, and maybe I'm wrong, but I'm assuming that the great majority of the other women that you're meeting are older, that the demographic is older and shrinking. And if you're seeking a community, just the fact that its members are dying off, people that you might want to connect to are leaving this world, does that make it more difficult, Sister Colleen Gibson?
I think it's something that you have to weigh, John, and it's definitely something I've been conscious since the moment that I showed up on the sister's doorstep, that it wasn't something that was a foreign idea, but it's also a struggle. You know, as we live this life, I know that more often than not, when I get an email from the congregation that has something about a death notice, it's probably one of my sisters who's mm-hmm. passed on into the next life. And so, you know, it's something that in my own discernment, I've had to struggle with and had to sit with. But there's something about the wisdom that our older sisters bring to us that is amazing, and that they've lived this life for so long that we can tap into it. And I've lived with 70-year-olds, 80-year-olds, people who are, you know, double my age, who are as young as me in spirit. And sometimes I have to say, like, sister, rein it back in, because I don't think you can actually do that at 77. Like, that's it's not plausible. But at the same time, I mean, it's important. And one of the things that has been emphasized for me over and over in my formation as a sister is it's important to make connections within the congregation and find your place and find a sense of belonging and welcome between generations, but also the importance of making connections with my own peers, because there aren't as many younger sisters. There aren't as many people who are in my age bracket. And so strengthening those connections, because they're going to last, but also connecting outside the convent.
Sister Josephine, what do you feel about that point that Sister Colleen just made, that it's a shrinking community?
Yeah, thanks for calling on me. I was actually going to ask if I could chime in on that too, because I think for me, John, you've kind of there in that question plugged into what's, I think, one of the biggest struggles for a woman in formation, for a woman in discernment. And, you know, I'm a Black woman, right? So I've walked in the doors of my first convent that I lived in, and I was the youngest in the house and the only Black person in the house. And so, you know, there is kind of a tension in that. For me, I discovered a beautiful experience. It ended up being, I mean, probably the most life-enriching, like, relationship building. It was a beautiful experience for me. But there was a tension in that I had to face. So I think that you have tapped into kind of one of the difficulties of formation. I know Colleen touched on seeking out creative ways to find peers. And I don't know if y'all know this, but Colleen and I actually know each other. We participated in a program together here in the Chicago area for about 8 months, where novices from different communities came together once a week and we had classes together. But it was much more than class. It was an opportunity to have a peer community in a place where religious life, the face of religious life today, doesn't necessarily have that within the walls of each convent.
I'd like to welcome another voice into the conversation. Joining us now from Marriottsville, Maryland, is Sister Patricia Dowling, and she is a vocational director for the Sisters of Bon Secours. Welcome, Sister Pat.
Thank you, John. I'm glad to be here.
So in a sense, you're the recruiter. You're at the point of entry for women who are considering for your order. You're at the point of entry for women who are considering becoming nuns. And I really would like to know how that process is working. Did they find you, or do you go out and find them?
Well, for the most part, they're finding us. Actually, today, in today's world, what's happening is a lot of women go on the internet to search for communities and to explore, find out more about religious life, and they're somewhat surprised at the number of communities that actually exist, and sometimes that can be overwhelming for them. Mm-hmm. But they do internet searches, and I think the other thing is they ask personal friends. They'll ask their pastor at their church, and they also are talking with others about religious life. For the most part, I find that they don't share this with too many people, though. They don't share it with their parents until much later in the process.
Why do you think that is?
I think that they are wanting to make a decision for themselves and are somewhat fearful that their parents will try to dissuade them from making a decision to enter religious life today. Mm-hmm. And perhaps that's because of, you know, the myths that are out there, the way they might see religious life through, unfortunately, how the media portrays religious today.
What's the worst myth that you find you have to combat, that these young women have to combat with, and that's a little bit what I was talking about pushback before. What's the worst or the most wrong myth that's out there?
I think one is that you're separated from the world. That would be one myth. And it has to do, I think, with how people envision religious life from years ago. And so they don't believe that their daughters or sons will will continue to have relationships with them.
And I'm curious to you, given that the pool of potential nuns seems to be smaller than it was, say, 40, 50 years ago, do you accept everyone who comes to you?
Well, no, not exactly. There is what we call a discernment process, and that's really to help the woman to understand if she's really called to religious life or not. Mm-hmm. And that really takes time. It's a process, actually. And it's basically helping the woman to get below the surface, to understand what her motivation is, to understand, is this really coming from God or is it coming from me?
Well, what would be a woman whom ultimately you would say no to? And by no, I mean, I'm sure it's not that harsh, but that this is not the thing for you. It's not going to work out. Who do you say no to?
Well, I think that, you know, there are some individuals who are trying to escape in a way. They might want security from, you know, whatever they're dealing with or from the world. They think that religious life might be a safe haven, mm-hmm. Rather than trying to take responsibility for themselves. Sometimes, you know, I have to say no to women who might have psychological disorders, mm-hmm. that would make it very difficult for them to live in religious life in a community setting. And sometimes, you know, I have to say no to women who, at least not say no, but delay an answer for someone who may be a recent convert to Catholicism, you know, to help them to really get a handle on whether this is my first fervor and it's something that I just want to quickly respond to versus becoming more deeply immersed in my new faith. And, you know, taking it more slowly than in terms of understanding, is God really calling me to something else?
And given us, and some of the women we're talking with today are they're not teenagers. They're women who have lived a bit. And I'm assuming that means that some of the women who come to you have literally a past, that there might be people who apply who have children or who have been married or who have had bouts with alcohol, something like that. Would those things disqualify somebody?
Well, I think in today's world, if you know, if you're divorced, you have an annulment, mm-hmm. and your motivation is right, and you have the ability to live this life, then that's not a deterrent, not mm-hmm. in today's world. You know, one does have to be free, though, free to, you know, to say yes, to enter. And so having dependents would be a barrier simply because your obligation is still to children. So we would not accept anybody who had, you know, who had dependents. Mm-hmm. And at times, you know, we have to say even no to individuals who might have, you know, debt. Now, educational debt is negotiable for many, you know, with many communities, but if it involves other debt, that's a bigger issue.
Sister Patricia, I have to cut you off just because of time limit, but thank you very much for sharing those insights. It was very, very interesting.
Well, you're welcome.
And Danielle and Sisters Colleen and Josephine, please stay with us. We're discussing life as a young nun and why women are choosing to live life in religious communities. I'm John Donvan, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point as we listen to Sister Mary Clarence as Whoopi Goldberg entering a convent in the 1992 film Sister Act. She leads the choir with Hail Holy Queen. This is On Point. I'm John Donvan, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about declarations of faith that have led our guests today to become nuns. We are talking with Danielle Gagnon, and in July she will become a novice with the Sisters of Mercy, with Sister Josephine of the Holy Family of Nazareth and a former vice president at Bank of America, and with Sister Colleen, a sister of St. Joseph, who writes the Global Sister blog for the National Catholic Reporter. I want to very quickly go to something that was said recently by 36-year-old mother Cecilia Snell, who was a French horn player, performer, excellent. She played with the Columbus Symphony before she joined the Benedictines of Mary, which is a cloistered order in rural Missouri. And she was interviewed on CBS Sunday Morning and said that she did not throw her life away.
I promise you, I guarantee you, we are the happiest people on the face of this earth. We are the most fulfilled. We are the most free. And we would not exchange this life for anything.
Well, Sister Josephine Garrett, that sounds like a very high bar. We would not exchange this life for anything. Does it ring true for you?
Yeah, it actually does ring true for me. And I like that she says she didn't throw her life away. You know, just thinking about, you know, I've been grateful for discernment and for formation because it helps me to reflect back. And like, it wasn't like this jumping ship and changing course. It was kind of like a continuing on the journey. So for me, I agree with what Mother said. It wasn't a throwing a life away. It was continue on a journey from Bank of America into the Sisters of the Holy Family of Nazareth, where I'm trying to bring all that I am and all the gifts that God gave me in my work and my career now into my life and community.
You are here to say that it beats banking.
I mean, for me, because it's my calling, right? So for me, it beats banking. But for somebody else, you know, banking.
I'm just picturing all the bankers driving off the road right now.
I know, right?
Let's bring in Ed from Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, Ed. You're on Point.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just for background, I'm a father of six. My two youngest children, a boy and a girl. My son is discerning the priesthood, and my youngest daughter is discerning religious life for the Sisters of Life. My daughter graduated from Franciscan University and has wanted to consider religious life since the age of 13. And when she got more serious about this and as she approached the age of discernment, my wife and I were cautiously encouraging. We wanted the decision not to be influenced by what we thought. But I wanted to just, my comment was that this concept of discernment is really something that transcends religious life. It's something that should be in all of our lives. Mm-hmm. And I think that what's the pushback that these young women are talking about comes from the fact that our culture, that religion is countercultural now, and religious life even more so countercultural. Mm-hmm. And I think that we would all benefit. For example, I have children that are married. We wanted them to go through a discernment process in preparation for marriage, because that also is a calling and vocation.
Let's see what
so this concept.
I'm sorry. I just want to finish your thought. I apologize for interrupting. Finish your thought, and I want to have Sister Colleen respond to it.
Yeah, so just that this concept of discernment is something that the Lord calls all of us to do. Mm-hmm. You know, not just religious life, and we all are going to struggle. So anyway, that's my comment. I think the culture would benefit from all of us being more discerning about our calling.
What do you think of that, Sister Colleen?
Well, first off, congratulations, Ed, and blessings on your son and your daughter and all of your children. I would definitely echo what Ed is talking about, that we are called, no matter what our life is, whether you're married, single, or a sister, brother, priest, we're called to a discerning lifestyle. We're called to consider what God wants in our lives and where we can most truly be who we're called to be, where we can most fully be ourselves. And so that means taking in everything that happens in our day, everything that has composed our life up to this point, and everything that we feel, you know, the Holy Spirit or God calling us to. And so that means being in relationship with other people, but it means making, you know, informed choices and prayerful choices, that it's much more than making a decision entering this life.
And
it's much more.
Ed made the point about potentially the religious life being seen as being in conflict with the culture. And Sister Pat was talking about myths and tensions. And one of them that's obvious and it's out there is the fact that you are all women in an institution that that is regarded traditionally as being a patriarchy. And whether you agree with that or not, the reality is that the church is an organization that is headed and will always be headed by a man, that you will not ever be able to celebrate Mass unless something dramatic changes, and that particularly between the Vatican now and a large section of the sisterhood in the United States, American sisterhood, there's a tension over assertion of the voices of women who are members of orders here. So I want to ask you to take that on. The perception I think a lot of people might say is, well, listen, you're going into the convent, I'm joining an order, therefore I'm going to be subservient. I'm joining an organization that makes women subservient. And Danielle Gagnon, why don't you take that on? Because I'm sure you've thought about it.
I have thought about it, John. And I would really go back to the very beginning of our church and say that from the very beginning, women have played a really critical role in the life of our church. You know, Jesus had a lot of friends who were women, and they were among the first proclaimers of the gospel. And I think that women will continue to have very, very strong roles in shaping the future of our church, and I'd really like to be among them.
And Sister Josephine, the same question to you.
Yeah, I like what when I was listening to what you were saying, what you opened the show with came to my mind when you opened the quote from Oprah about call. Mm-hmm. And so what Danielle just said, sisters have been being called for years. Doing so much in the church and what we're doing is valuable. So I think it's important for us to focus on what we're being called to do today and the rich history that we have and all that the church has asked us to do over the centuries and focus in on that. And also to be open to, I think words like subservient in our culture today automatically take on a negative connotation. But if you're subservient to a person who has your best interest in mind and loves you, what's so bad about that?
Is that to say, and I hear what you're saying about flipping that word subservient on its head, but is that to say that your position is that you trust in the male leadership of the church to take care of you and watch out for you?
I do trust in the hierarchy of the church. I do trust in the structure of the church because I know that at the top of all of that is God, the triune God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And I know that the people in our church are people. And so we're not in a situation where all the leaders who are human are perfect. But the hierarchy of the church, from a spiritual perspective, I definitely trust in it because it's God himself.
And Sister Colleen, sort of the same question to you. Let me actually put it in a different way. Did this issue of the role of women in the church, in particularly for those who become nuns, did that in any way become an issue that you needed to work through in order to become a sister?
I think it was something that was always on my plate, John. It was always something that I was interested in and concerned with. I studied religious studies and was deep into feminist theology. And so it's something that I was concerned with and concerned with, you know, women's roles in society and women's roles in the church. And what I've constantly gone back to is what our new Pope calls us to. Pope Francis is all about a culture of encounter. Listening to the voices of many so that the church can move forward together. And so I didn't enter this life to lose my voice. Mm-hmm. I have my voice, and I know that it contributes to the tapestry that is our church, and it will move us forward together as we encounter one another, male, female, gay, straight, black, white. We're all in this together, and it's the beautiful thing about a universal church is I want to be a part of that, and I want to be a part of moving that forward and bringing all people together in this world.
Let's bring in Jeff from Brighton, Massachusetts. Hi, Jeff. You're on Point.
Hey, John. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Appreciate it. First and foremost, I want to say I think I know Sister Colleen back from youth group in Hillsborough, New Jersey. I don't know if that's true, but if so, hi, Colleen. I hope it does.
Hey, John.
Jeff, yeah.
Jeff
Wallace.
Yeah,
very nice.
Jeff Wallace, yeah, Colleen. Good to hear from you. This is insane. But I actually had an actual question as well. Pope Francis, in this past interviews, I guess he gave an interview on his plane going to somewhere, I forget. But he mentioned once that he was interested in developing a better theology for women, kind of going on this topic that you guys have been talking about for the past few minutes. And so I was wondering, as young nuns or people discerning their religious life, or even, I guess, if you could speak for lay women who are discerning religious life, what do you believe your role is in shaping that theology of women, that new theology of women that Pope Francis is asking for?
Danielle, why don't you take that question? Because Sister Colleen was just talking a little bit about that. I'd like to hear your take on it. Do you have a role in shaping the conversation about the – do you have a part in shaping the conversation about the role of women?
I do. I think we all do, John. I think each of us has a voice, and each of us is called to speak for with our own integrity and from our own experience. And together, I think we shape the future and the role and hopefully the theology of women in our church.
Let's bring in Perry from Boston. Hi, Perry. You're on Point.
Hi, John. Great conversation today. I'm from the perspective of a family member. Again, a little bit different perspective. My sister joined Mother Teresa's Missionaries of Charity in the early 80s, and at the time she had a brand new college degree. My dad was Jewish and not much practicing, but still was very upset, understandably, that she was, in theory, throwing her life away, and it was very confusing for him. And we just really didn't know what to think of it because we had grown up Catholic, but not that Catholic. And his whole perspective changed the day that his phone rang, and it was Mother Teresa calling him, saying, "I want to thank you for giving your daughter to God."
Wow.
At that point, he then certainly tried much harder to embrace it, and he died a few years later, but had certainly embraced that the aspect of her new life. And her life with Missionaries of Charity, just to touch on a couple of the points that were made in the conversation as I've been listening, it's been very interesting for her because she's been a minority 99% of the time. Most of Mother Teresa's sisters are from India. And so she's been all over the world in the poorest places helping unwed mothers, HIV. She went to Haiti and orphanages. She's in Africa currently. And it's not an easy life. And they only get a break every 7 years. They get to come home for 2 weeks.
Wow.
So it's a hard life, but, you know, she's so happy because she's making a difference. And she's now over 30 years in this life. And it's just, it's really kind of an amazing thing. It's really an amazing thing. And we're just very proud of her. And I give all you sisters credit for following your heart and doing what you want to do when you're helping the rest of the world, and
all right.
We all appreciate that.
Thanks, Perry, very much. And Danielle, I mean, that interesting thing, it sounds like it can be a hard life, but it's a little bit like, you know, join the Marines and see the world. There can be some real adventure in what you're choosing.
Mm-hmm. I think that is part of the wonderful mystery and journey of religious life, is that we're asked to remain open to where God's calling us to be. And so that can lead us to very maybe unusual, unexpected places, and certainly surprising. And, you know, I grew up in Massachusetts, but am now in Philadelphia, and never thought that I would be living outside of New England, away from my family. But like I said, life is full of surprises. And when we're discerning and following where God's calling, it can lead us to some interesting places.
Sister Josephine, I understand that you have decided and do wear the traditional habit. Why did you make that decision?
Well, my habit is a kind of simple religious garb right now, and a veil. And my community is a habited community. We have some variation with options, but the Sisters of the Holy Family of Nazareth are a habited community. So that's the first reason, is all of our sisters do wear some form of a habit. But also for me, just as I try to discern and try to answer God's call in this life, you know, religious in a way, we're trying to be prophets in the world, reveal who God is through our own lives. And so for me, this habit, this garb that I wear, is a dimension of that prophetic call.
Well, and Sister Colleen, you are not wearing the traditional habit? In other words,
not.
So no, you know, if somebody were to see you from 50 yards walking down the street, they don't know that you're a nun.
I would look like a regular 28-year-old woman walking down the street. Yep. Mm-hmm. From 50 yards, from 5 feet, there would be no distinguishing marks to me. And it was a choice that I made as I was discerning that really I wanted to be a witness to my faith in the world, but I wanted to do so in a way that I could be with people. And so for some people, that means being in a veil or in a habit. And for some people, it means being in street clothes. And I've found that it allows me to be in relationship with people one-on-one, and they don't bring bias or stereotype into it. So,
what we've learned from all three of you in the course of this conversation is that there may not be many of you, or there's not as many as there used to be, but there are certainly many ways to be you, a lot of choices. Thanks very much to all of you. Sister Colleen of the Sisters of St. Joseph, thanks so much. Sister Josephine, the Holy Family of Nazareth, thank you.
Thank you.
And Danielle Gagnon, you're about to begin the life as a novice with the Sisters of Mercy. All the best to you.
Thank you so much, John.
You can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. And we're ending the hour with Emmanuel, performed by the Benedictines of Mary, Queen of Apostles. The cloistered nuns in rural Missouri topped the Billboard Classical charts in 2012 and 2013. I'm John Donvan, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.